Let's be honest, surveys aren't cutting it anymore. Response rates are low, focus groups take weeks, and at the end of it all, you still don't know how people really feel. Talkalytics changes that. Talkalytics is a voice-based feedback platform that captures what your customers are saying and how they're saying it. Tone, emotion, sentiment, the stuff that actually drives decisions. Whether you're testing brand messaging, creative, product concepts, or just want to know if your campaign is hitting the mark, Talkalytics gives you answers that go way beyond the checkbox. Emotionally connected customers spend twice as much. If you want to create real connection, it starts by listening differently. Head to talkalytics.com/getinsights to see how it works. That's talkalytics.com/getinsights. Talkalytics, because the voice always tells you more. Listening to AW360, a podcast from Advertising Week. Recorded live at Advertising Week Europe 2025 in London, AW360 features thought leadership conversations with the best and the brightest in the advertising, marketing, and technology communities. If you enjoy AW360, we'd appreciate it if you took the time to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, left a positive review, or shared with your friends and colleagues. Thanks for listening. You are listening to the AW360 podcast, where we're recording live from Advertising Week Europe 2025 here at 180 Studios in London. I'm joined today by Bob Sheard, founder of Fresh Britain. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So to start things off, tell me about Fresh Britain and your role there.
Well, I co-founded it 25 years ago with my wife, Sophie. We're basically brand designers. We redesigned and designed over 250 brands in that time, ranging from Nike to New Balance, Louis Vuitton to Levi's. So we've been around the block a bit.
Pretty much everyone. It might even be easier just to say who you haven't done yet. One of the claims in your forthcoming book, The Brand New Everything, How Brands Can Save the World, is that brands can step in where politics are falling short, which is, let's face it, quite a few places, especially on big issues like climate change. Why do you think brands are better suited to lead that kind of change?
If you look historically at sort of significant social change, then it's fallen to idealists to create the space for the realists to move into. If you take sort of civil rights movement, for instance, you know, you got sort of Bob Dylan singing Blowing in the Wind, and then that pissed Sam Cooke off, so he wrote, you know, that a white guy was singing about black rights, so he wrote A Change Is Gonna Come, and then you got the sort of that kind of had catalyzed and had an accelerating effect on the movement. And then the movement created the space that then politics and policy with Lyndon Baines Johnson, when he enacted the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Act, they moved into it. If you leave it to politicians, there's no space for them to move unless we create it. So as brand designers, it falls upon us as well as other people in culture and design to start to create the space. If you look at the three things that have really messed up our lives in the last sort of decade, it's COVID, climate change, and conflict. As citizens of the world, we have no democratic lever to pull to decide who manages that on our behalf. You've just got 195 countries that operate within national boundaries, trying to manage in a disintegrated way three phenomena that ignore national boundaries. The only sort of people we can hope to help do that is institutions that were designed at the end of the Second World War by a load of white guys when we had a colonial world, so the UN, WTO, and stuff. So as a citizen of the world, the only expression you have to create the change you want to see is how you spend your money. So your consumption becomes a democratic expression. You buy the products that represent the future you want to live in, and you buy the brands that represent the future that you want to see. So that brings into focus why brands are really important. In terms of our own personal identities and expression, we used to, back in the day, 5,000 years ago, it was about our tribal identity, our family identity, our national, our religious identity, the identity of our leaders and our institutions. And that's now been replaced in the latter half of the 20th century by brands, which become an expression of our own meaning system and self-belief. So you can start to see, actually, they're going to play an important part. Not the only part, but an important part.
There's an example in the book with Simon that's super interesting to me, how they're shifting from making products to offering experiences and services. What does that kind of regenerative growth really look like day to day? And how do you convince a company that growing doesn't have to mean making more stuff for people to buy?
Yeah, it's a really good point. It's basically, if we're going to create a stable situation where we're going to have sustainability and sustainable life on Earth. At the moment, there's 8 billion of us on the planet. We haven't got the answer to sustainable life on Earth right now. Most demographers say that by the end of this century, there'll be 12 billion of us on the planet. We have to figure out how we can grow. We can't roll back capitalism. We have to use the profit motive to enable us to grow. But we have to be able to grow above the economic threshold for positive, purposeful life, but below the ecological threshold for unsustainable life. So finding out where brands can thrive is in the middle of those two thresholds, meaning that, yes, they're going to have to make some products, but those products need to be regeneratively sourced and regeneratively manufactured in such a way that they have multi-use afterlives, long aesthetic life expectancies, long durable life expectancies, and they replenish the planet. But then when we look into brands more deeply, we can see that there is latent knowledge, experience, and intelligence there that can become other pathways to growth. Because as consumers evolve from my generation and your generation, where we just consume to show people how rich we were, to Generation Z and Generation Alpha, we used to drive around in a Range Rover saying, procreate with me, your kids won't go hungry, I'm a good hunter. That's kind of evolving away.
Yeah.
And Generation Z and Alpha are becoming more defined by what they know and more defined by what they do and less defined by what they own. So there's the secret. We can unlock that secret to change the way we design consumption and production, meaning that there's an opportunity for brands to find pathways to grow that involve the monetization of knowledge, experiences, and intelligence. So with Simon, for example, which is basically an ice axe company in Chamonix doing about 100 million, 160-year-old Alpenese company. I love that brand, but my connection to it will only manifest if I want an ice axe.
Yeah.
It's not likely in Primrose Hill, right? So, but I want to be able to access it. I want to learn and train for alpinism. I want to go on courses for alpinism. I want to rent for alpinism, have nutrition, have fitness, have education and qualifications, and those represent new pathways for growth. So what we've done with that brand is we've folded in a $1 billion brand into Simond that's purely regenerative, so that gets it to 1.1. And then we're connecting it to a network of 2,500 stores, which means it will get to about 3.5 billion in turnover, which will make that small company the biggest outdoor company in its sector, and it'll be entirely regenerative. So that'll be a great case study that will be a proof point for other sectors.
Amazing. You know, what you're talking about is sort of like almost like a complete mindset shift for everybody involved, but brands especially. What kind of success metrics do you think companies should be using then with that shift, and how can they actually change the way they operate?
Yeah, it's a really great question. McKinsey sadly reported before Christmas that in the fashion sector, the CEOs within the fashion sector had let sustainability slip beyond their top five priorities because they didn't see it as a factor to generate growth. And they are measured on metrics of profitability and revenue. When I was asked the question, what do we do then about the CEOs? And I said, well, you change them. You either change them or you re-educate them. Because actually, when you look at the 50 most valuable companies in the world and you analyze their brand roles, in the top six, top three of the top six are there, and they exist to redesign the world, to challenge the world and reimagine the world. And they have multiples of over plus 22, which means that for shareholder value, which CEOs are measured on, if we can connect shareholder value to a change in more progressive thinking and thought, then we can realign CEOs around it. What we're doing also is our book, which is coming out, is going to represent the first of three books, which will become an educational platform. The first one will be an undergraduate degree in brand design. The second one will be an MBA, and the third one will be PPE, all done in design colleges, so that we get people from creative backgrounds, inculcate them with regenerative thinking, and get them to go out into the world and change these larger companies from within. Regenerative sleeper cells, if you like.
I love that. So, you know, you talk about how consumption could be a force for good if we do it differently. How do we get people to see that what they buy could be part of the solution and not part of the problem? And this is a question that's very near and dear to me because I am, as you were discussing before, I'm trying to sort of vote with my wallet, you know, these days. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, as a consumer, I feel the need to do.
Yeah, and I think we all have a level of consciousness as consumers, which means we're ahead of brands. So in 2020, brands and companies had a singular focus around survival. You know, they were dealing with over 60 changes in furlough laws and things like that. Their entire focus was on survival, whereas their consumers were forced to rethink their entire meaning system from how their experience of COVID changed their outlook on their life. And so consumers have leapfrogged over brands. What that means, these brands now have to come to terms with where consumers are going to be. And we are becoming more and more conscious that things aren't quite right. And what we're saying is, look, we're probably, people of our generation are not going to be the ones that are going to solve climate change, COVID and conflict. We're not going to be the ones that are going to find the solution for sustainable life on Earth. But through the choices we make every day, to our individual 8 billion choices on consumption, if we make good choices, we can increase the window of time for someone not born today who will have more time to find that solution. Our job won't be to get the solution, but we've got to think like cathedral builders. What we build today, we may not benefit from, but generations in the future will, and that's got to drive our choices.
It's a hard thing to do for certain people, but I'm very hopeful that we can get there.
Well, we're trying to transform it with the fashion sector. So if we can transform it in fashion, you can transform it everywhere. And that means we've got to bleed fashion off their addiction to planned obsolescence. So we've got to take them off that, their addiction to the new. We've got to make people in fashion and consumers of fashion become comfortable with imperfection. They've got to celebrate patina. They've got to realize that actually, as consumers, we respect perfection, but we love imperfection. When we can see the frailties, the character and the vulnerabilities in products and people, we're more likely to fall in love with them than perfection. If we can do that and wean them off planned obsolescence, we can change fashion, and then fashion can influence the rest of design.
You know, we've got a few great examples of regenerative brands out there, but they feel like the exception rather than the rule. What would you say is holding the rest of the business world back, and what's it going to take to make this kind of thinking the norm?
A little bit of enlightenment, and the fact that when Tesla was not in profit, it represented a kind of madman's dream. And then when it went into its first quarter of profitability, you had an alignment around the profit motive and the sustainability motive. And Tesla still today, even though with the madness that's been going on in the markets, it still has a multiple of times 60 today. It was 120 about 3 weeks ago. Even at time 60, companies would kill for that kind of multiple, that shareholder value. So the more enlightened we become around that, if we can make sustainability make a profit, then that will be the big lightning shift that will change everything.
Last question. If one wanted to find out more about you, your book, and Fresh Britain, where should they go?
On May the 2nd, we're having an event at Central St. Martin's where we're launching the book. We've got a panel of idealists and a panel of realists. And then we're partying at the Groucho Club afterwards. So anyone that wants to come, get in contact with Naomi at freshbritain.com and you're all welcome.
Excellent. Well, Bob, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show. This was great.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to AW360. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, including The Trustmakers, our podcast with the Edelman Trust Institute, now in its fourth season. You'll find all of Advertising Week's podcasts at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening.